This podcast contains adult content and adult language. In no way does this reflect the opinions of other contributors of Good Morning Gloucester or Homecast. Your discretion is advised.
Good morning, Gloucester. Time for Alicia Unleashed. Talking about what's going on in these streets. Alicia, Alicia Unleashed. Bitches.
What's up, listeners? It's B-Side. Alicia is not with us today. Super Bowl pandemic. She has nodes. So I am here doing this by myself with a friend of mine who I have been trying to get on the podcast for 4 years. And it is Lamar Rollins. Rollins. Damn it! Oh, I did it!
The first time. I knew you were going to do that too.
Look, I ain't even editing this. Oh, man. It's crap.
That's what happens when you ask. You verify.
Oh, man. I already fucked this up, Alicia. I'm so sorry. Anyway, so Lamar and I have known each other about maybe what, nine years or so?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. So what do you do for a living, Lamar? Let's explain to the listeners what you do for a living, because I also find that super fascinating.
So I am an architect. I work for an architecture firm in Boston. We do work kind of up and down the Eastern Seaboard, and then kind of as west as kind of Chicago, Midwest area. We do a lot of mod rehab work, which is basically developers that have these 200, 300 apartment complexes. They'll do tax credits and refinance their loans in order to do renovations to their properties, like to redo the kitchens, redo the bathrooms. And they typically do that every 30 years or so. So the company that I work for has been around long enough that we're kind of doing the second round of projects that we've done in the past. So that's kind of cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you always want to be an architect growing up?
No, not really. My parents would say that I did because they noticed when I travel, I just took photos of buildings and not people. Like most of the photos on my Instagram, on my Facebook, everywhere, I rarely take a photo of myself. I know I was there. I don't need a photo of myself there. So I've been more fascinated with like the architecture of things and how cities are put together. But as a kid, I remember one of the earliest things I wanted to be was like a sniper in the police or for SWAT. Like, what did I know? I knew a detective. Like, I grew up with close to a family that I knew a detective. So I was really cool with him, and he was a Boston cop, and he brought me to the headquarters and gave me a tour of and showed me the labs and stuff. So that was all pretty cool. So I could have done that. I've done a lot of things in my years, so I really could have done anything.
So when did you start getting into architecture? Like,
I chose it as a major because in high school, I was always good at art, science, and math. And in my head, I thought, okay, architecture sounds like the thing for me. In reality, those things don't really correlate as much. More attention to detail, coordination, multitasking, those kind of skills are important for what I do. But I remember my guidance counselor in high school asking me, what do you want to do? And I said that, and it was like, okay. And then I just went with it. I realized in freshman year that none of those things mattered, but I just stuck with it. And 15 years later, I'm still doing it. Something like that. 15 years. Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah, I've watched your traveling, and your desk, your office desk is like, I'm like, no, thank you. Yeah. I'm out. Mm-mm. But I've also seen your projects where they've literally started from the ground up or the renovations. And I've also been very fascinated with how someone has just, I don't know any other architects. So I'm like, how does one get into architect, like becoming an architect? Like, you know, there's, you know, I've met some people before where like, well, I was very fascinated with Legos in the day. And I'm like,
Yeah. I mean, everyone had Legos. So like, that's the toy that you play with, Legos or Kinects or Lincoln Logs. So it's like, yeah, everyone learns how to build things when they're a kid because it's busy work and it helps with hand-eye coordination. Like, that doesn't really like lead you towards architecture. But I don't know. I was just kind of, I got in the program that I wanted to, and that was the path I said I was going to do. So there was no other option at that point. I was going to just keep going. I remembered really not liking school, like the concept of school, because I interned at an architecture firm all throughout college, which wasn't typical for a lot of people. Like I had an internship freshman year, and I learned more in 1 week at an internship working for a firm than I did probably all years in college. There are certain semesters I remember being the ones where I actually learned something and I was like, finally, we need more of this. But for the most part, it's like the old school apprenticeship type deal. That's like the trades kind of field that made me actually like architecture a lot more and actually made it so that I stayed in school. Because they offered me a job after my sophomore year, I want to say. They're like, why don't you just stay and work? And I was like, well, my parents will kill me if I leave college, and spending 60 grand a year for college, you might as well just get it over with and get that stupid piece of paper. that is probably collecting dust somewhere.
Now, where did you go to school?
University of Miami.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes.
And I actually stayed in studio. I was not out clubbing. Maybe once a month I would go out, but I was up late in my studio, sleep deprived, or sleeping on a drafting table like everyone else.
I was going to say, were you sleeping on the drafting table? That was like literally my next question to you.
They're so comfortable. You haven't slept until you've slept on a drafting table with like ink spilled all over it and pencil shavings and whatnot.
So not only that, one of the main reasons why I also have wanted you on the podcast is because you do something every winter. And I'm not entirely sure for how long, which is one of my questions. You work the Super Bowl halftime show.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever it can work with my real job schedule, I try to make it work. It's a little, it's kind of a vacation for myself, although I'm pretty much working two jobs when I'm doing that part. But my first one was Prince. And that happened in Miami because when I was at school, they were having rehearsals at Nova Southern, a campus that was close by. And I had a friend that went to school there and she was volunteering to move the stages. And they needed more people. So she asked me, like, do you want to work on the halftime show? I'm like, what are you talking about? We move the stages on. I'm like, all right, cool, fine, whatever. So I did that. And it was amazing as everyone that's seen that show can attest to, probably like it's the best halftime show that's ever
been done. It's still talked about to this day. Like they still like leading up to yesterday's, episode leading up to yesterday's Super Bowl. That was talked about. I literally still watch that 8-minute and 14-second YouTube yep. of discussing the impact of that that one. So
that's one of the few ones that I actually have saved on YouTube as a favorite, like to just revisit that to get me ready for another one. It's a great one.
So how many of them have you done?
Yesterday makes my 8th one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me, so you're not doing the production, like the lights or anything. You're moving the stage. Is that what I'm to understand?
So depending on the year and what they need me to do, I'm either helping move the stage, or not the stage, a part of the stage, because it's a lot, or a lot of the like latter years I've helped pull bundles of cables to the stage that helps power it and power the lighting, the sound, the audio, like all of that. So depending on the year, this year I helped move a big lighting cart because the stage was completely different this year.
Which I'm going to get to later.
Yeah.
Now, I know you signed an NDA, so of course you can say pass if I... you know, if there's anything that I, you know, ask and you're like, nope, can't answer that. So, now with, of course now, so, you know, your first volunteer, you're working a halftime show, like volunteering and it's Prince. And then on top of that, there is this torrential downpour.
Yeah.
So, So talk to me about how, in your mind, you're like, you know, we didn't prepare for this because Miami, I'm assuming Miami is not supposed to rain, just like it doesn't rain in San Diego.
Well, Miami, it basically rains every day, but it just downpours for like 10 minutes and then it's over.
Okay.
Unless it's hurricane season, it typically doesn't rain all day like it did that day.
Okay.
That was fun.
Now out of the, you said 8 years, out of the eight performances that you've helped, which one was the most challenging to work on, with and work on?
Honestly, probably this year.
Okay. Now,
this year.
Sorry, I'll let you go.
Well, this year was just a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it goes without saying the COVID aspect of it. We didn't have as many people as we usually have working it. The whole like camaraderie of it, because we all call it, that's our winter camp. Like it's a reunion of like the people in the industry, and like a lot of people weren't there, like a lot. Usually we have upwards of 700 people helping with just the stage part. This year we had 70.
Wow, 70?
Yeah.
And this stage was elaborate, like, because it was in the stands too.
Exactly. And that was the big change. They basically built a Broadway set in the stands because, of course, they had the space to do it because there weren't that many fans there. So the work that we did was pared down a lot. Like, we brought light carts out. I think there were like 8 of them, and that's all we had. The Who's stage, I believe, had upwards of 30 carts that we moved out, and that was like the biggest stage that they had done at that point, the big Who mm-hmm. logo, the circle.
Oh, I know. I know yeah. which one you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
And that thing went from like sideline to sideline in a circle. So it's just massive. This one was tiny on the field aspect of it, like the stuff that we had to do. But that set, for lack of any other better term, because that's essentially what it was, mm-hmm. was just, it was like 40 feet. No, it was taller than that. It was like 50, 60 feet tall, multiple layers, hydraulics and stuff so it can move. And like, it was insane.
Mm-hmm. Now, which we're out of the performances. So when you set up, do you get to watch it or are you still working while it's going on?
Depending on the year, most of the times I get to watch it. Sometimes there are different set changes, like Justin Timberlake in Minneapolis. We had to set a stage at one point, plug in the lighting for it, and then he moved on to another stage, and they moved the stage he was just on and brought another one in that case. So we had to take the power out and then plug that one in. Usually we're just on the sideline watching the show.
So how long before the Super Bowl actually happens do you have to prepare for this?
Me personally, it's usually, at least rehearsals, it's typically about 2.5 weeks. So it would be down there in like mid-January.
Okay.
This year, we truncated practices to just a week. So I got down there last Sunday.
And you just got off a plane like an hour ago.
Yeah, basically.
Wow.
My voice is a little...
Well, I appreciate you, coming on here. So, getting you fresh off a plane. So,
No problem. I'm used to just going to meetings right off of anyways, just like any other day.
So what year was the most exciting for you? Now, do they kind of reach out to you and say, hey, are you in for this year? Or do you reach out to them and say, I'm in? When do you make the decision?
Typically around October, November, we have a website that's, what is it, superbowlproductions.com. Like any, for the record, anyone can sign up for this. Because typically the way it used to be was they would get volunteers from the city that they were in, mm-hmm. And get as much as possible. And then there's a bunch of us who come every year because it's like the thing we do to start the year. So typically that website has a draft schedule or the schedule from the previous year. So you kind of get an idea of how much time you got to book housing and whatnot. And then they have applications that open up and it's usually around like September, October, November.
Wow.
So that's kind of it.
So for you, I know it kind of goes like you have to check your work schedule. But
yeah.
Mentally, when do you kind of make the decision, I'm in? Is does the team even play any kind of role?
No, the team is playing for hell. I used to think that whenever I decided I was doing a halftime show, the Patriots were not going to be in the Super Bowl because I had not seen them play. Mm-hmm. Ever until who did we beat? Oh, I
Maroon
should've...
5. It was 2 years ago, right? For Maroon 5.
Yeah, I think that was it. Whoever we played there, some bomb.
Wasn't it?
some victim. But there was one year where finally I was there. Oh, I was there for the Eagles one where we lost. I remember that one. Of course, I remember the team that beat us. But that was the first one that I had done that the Patriots were also in the Super Bowl. So that was fun. And of course, everyone's always trash talking because a lot of these, a lot of the staff that work, the stagehands, are from LA, or New York. So they hate Boston. So, but it's always fun. Like they're family at this point. And then the Maroon 5, whoever we beat, that was the first one I was there when we won. So that was cool. But usually I thought it was a curse at. I would
So,
take a year off and say, all right, guys, we're not going to the Super Bowl next year. I'm working a halftime show.
when do you get to? I mean, obviously, the news and the press kind of releases who the performer is going to be. Do you already know ahead of time after you've committed to it, or is that like you find out just like the rest of the country?
Yeah, I find out the same time everyone else does. Yeah, they keep that pretty tight-lipped until it's like set in stone. They have a show, they know what they're gonna do, and then they release it.
Now, which stage would you say was probably the most challenging for you, out of the time that you've done it, like the 8 years that you've done it?
I think the most challenging one was probably the Who in Miami, mainly because of how big the stage pieces were and the way the VOM or the tunnel is located. It's located right behind the goalpost. So we have to come out and do a quick turn, like S turn around the goalpost, not hitting the post. And that cart was just massive. And then once we got it in place, it extended even further. So it was like a transformer at that point. But
Have you
that's like the
ever,
most.
yeah. So have you ever been like beyond excited for any of the performers that you've, built the stage for? Like where you're like, I can't believe this is right in front of me right now. And they are literally standing on things I just put my hands on.
Honestly, no. I'm really not a like I can't stand pop culture. It sounds so like arrogant to say this, but I've been around a lot of celebrities, like just in passing, like I went to school at University of Miami, and Miami celebrities are all over the place. And also all these Super Bowls at this point, celebrities are just walking in a tunnel. Celebrities are going to the dress rehearsals. I remember Chris Rock, he's a huge Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. And for the Bruno Mars Red Hot Chili Peppers one in New Jersey, he came to the dress rehearsal and he was standing right by me and just like having a blast. Like he was like a little kid. It was cool. It's cool to see celebrities like normal people. And as much as I just like relax, ignore them, let them do their thing, the more they hang out, the more they feel comfortable being in a position that they can just walk around, say hi to people, talk to people. And not like be afraid some crazy fan is gonna run up going like, oh, I love you, blah, 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 and like hound them. And then security has to get involved. And then, what's the fun of that? So I've kind of gotten, I've never really been the starstruck person, but also it's like I'm also there for a job to do. So that's, and it's not to inflate it, but it's important that I focus on that because we're moving massive pieces of equipment on wheels, and the second someone like plays around or doesn't have their hand on the cart, something bad can happen very quickly. Like very quickly. So it's important to remember that, and we're always like, especially for the ones that have done a lot, we make sure to stress that to the newcomers, like, guys, I get it. It's a lot of fun. It's exciting. we're going to see this show 5 million times. You're going to hate this song by the time it's done because we're going to hear it so many times. You're going to have a chance to be around the talent because we're just going to be around each other that much. So just relax, take it easy, and your time will come. But mm-hmm. pay attention to what you're doing first until we're set.
So with that, has there ever been in any of the performances that you've worked on, have you ever been like nervous once it's been set where you're like, like, or are you nervous the entire time for every one of these performances?
No, I mean, we practice so much, mm-hmm. even in the 2 week span. Like our schedule is like evenings from, let's say, 5 or 6 to 11 at night.
Wow.
So people are working their day job and then they're coming to practice and working all night. And we run, we start slow with attention, controlled, and then we pick it up. Each practice, we get better and better. We're not worried about the time at any point. There's other people that can worry about the time, but we just worry, what is our move? How do we do it efficiently, safely, and with like control? And then by the time it's game time, we can do it with our eyes closed, like quite literally, because we've just done it so many times. We're not even talking to each other to say like turn right, turn left, J turn, crab left, crab right, like all these lingo terms that we say in the beginning to like get everyone on the same page. By the time it's game day, it's too loud in there anyways. Like fans are going insane, and we know which path we got to take. We put our eyes on it and we go.
And you're doing this in the dark too, right?
No, they bring up the stadium lights for when we come in. When we come out, when we first break out, it's still dark because there's a chance that the cameras are still on the field. But they bring up the stadium light, which is good.
See, little known facts that I didn't know. Like yeah. every time, like, you know, the halftime show, I'm like, literally, yeah, stage is dark.
Yeah, yeah, they set the mood for sure. But when those lights come on, it's insane. It's like daylight. It's really ridiculous.
I mean, I will say, I've watched many a halftime show, and I will say, in the last 8 years that I've known you, or 9 years mm-hmm. that I've known you, I have watched most of them in support of knowing that you do this,
mm-hmm.
and begrudgingly, I watched Maroon 5.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually at a free party at Calhoun's from Mix 104.1, oh, nice. Getting drunk off my ass, and everyone was swooning over like Maroon 5. I'm like, shut up, guys. My friend built this stage. Like, shut up. I'm like, get these dudes off. I'm like, oh, I hate this dude so much. I hate him. I was like, I don't give a shit about this halftime show. I only care about my friend who built this stage. Like, I told you that the other day too. I'm like,
I'm typically the same way about the talent. I'm like, I'll listen to their music ahead of time just to like get my head mentally prepared for it, but I don't care.
How do you mentally prepare for this? Like, how do you, like, you said, okay, I'm in for this year. Let's go. You know, you're still at work, but then,
you know,
Christmas comes around and you're like, oh, my flight, you know, I know you're one of like JetBlue superstars. So
that's my private jet.
Yeah. It's not an ad for JetBlue. Listen, they are the bane of my existence. I don't have a code. I have PTSD from them. I still am not healed from when I broke my ankle on their jet bridge because I worked
for them. Oh, good.
I worked for them for 2 years. So,
oh, no.
Yeah. And
slippery jet bridge.
Yeah. Well, let's just, you know, there's many other reasons why I have PTSD, a failed engagement, but that's beside the point.
Oh, goodness.
A lot of debt.
Goodness.
I moved to San Diego for someone from JetBlue. I mean,
at least no.
I mean, hey, you know what? I got some free flights. Who else could say that they could just walk on a plane, fly to Long Beach to go get some barbecue for lunch and get back to Oakland? I mean,
see, that's a goal in life for me.
I mean, just, I also do that to Vegas. Lunch. Like, yeah. What am I doing for my birthday? I don't know. I'm getting my security badge and I'm going to jump on a Southwest flight and go to Vegas overnight, meet Gene Simmons, get thrown out of the porn awards, and I'm back.
Life experiences.
Happy 27th. No one believes me because I'm a little white girl, but I'm like, listen, just because I'm back in Massachusetts doesn't mean I didn't have a life in California.
Yeah, you got to live.
Oh, man. But yeah, so like, how do you mentally prepare yourself? If you're like, all right, I got to get into like this mode. Like, what do you do?
The key is, at least for me, is making sure that like the different parts of my life are already like in auto mode. So work, which I still got to work during the day unless I like I'll take a day or two off for it. But making sure all my meetings are in my calendar. I typically try not to schedule any additional meetings that week, those 2 weeks. Pushing up like site visits or flights that I have to do like a week early because I'm going to be away. Or like in New Jersey's instance, I also had a project that was happening at the time in like Neptune, it was called Neptune Towers. It was like close in New Jersey. So I was able to like drive over there and visit the site and then drive back. And I was in. So when I was in Atlanta, I had projects in Jacksonville. So I was able to drive down to Jacksonville for a day to do my site visits and then drive back for practice. So like kind of figuring out those kind of logistical things, I typically try to figure that out before Thanksgiving because between Thanksgiving and New Year's, it's a madhouse. It for some reason, everyone wants to go on vacation, but they just throw things at me to do. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my busiest time. Mm-hmm. But figuring out work, what meetings I have to do, what site visits I have to do, and making sure I'm fulfilling those obligations. If there's a meeting that I can't move, I have my boss cover for me. Like I had him cover my Friday 8 a.m. conference call that I always have because Friday is dress rehearsal day. Mm. 8 a.m. call time, out at 11 p.m. All day at the stadium, just waiting around, basically. So that's really it.
So this year, obviously, there was a pandemic and you talked about how the crew went from 700 to 70.
Yeah.
So how often did your nose get assaulted?
I see you saw my posts.
Listen, as a frontline worker, I get that all the time.
So it's funny. So what we had to do, I actually think this is important for people to understand kind of the precautions that were taken at the Super Bowl. Because I've seen some posts from people that just don't know what they're talking about and just making things up. Like, oh, the stadium was packed. It wasn't. There was 25,000 people there. That's a lot of people. The capacity of the stadium is 55, I think. 30,000 cutouts were in the seats, so that's why it looks so packed. Out of those 25,000 people that were there, 7,500 were vaccinated healthcare workers that the NFL brought in. They paid their ticket. Those tickets aren't NFL. Yeah. Super Bowl tickets costs are ridiculous, are a joke. But so there weren't a lot of people. So anyone that was flying in from out of town that was part of the field team crew, which is what we are, FTMs, field team members, we had to get a negative PCR COVID test within 48 hours of us flying out mm-hmm. or flying there. So this whole last year, with all the travel I've been doing and whatnot, I hadn't gotten tested once. I typically stay away from people. I typically wash my hands and like wear the mask, all that stuff. When I'm going to a project, I fly in, get in my rental car, go to my hotel, stay in my hotel room, sometimes for like 1 or 2 days, go to my job site, go back to my hotel room, wait until the airport, go to the airport, fly home. That's all I'm doing. Not even talking to anyone. So I hadn't tested for up until maybe like November, because they were saying you got to get this test before. So I was like, all right, I need to figure out what this process is like. How quickly am I going to get it back? Because I've been hearing all the nightmares and blah, blah, blah. So I got tested maybe 5 times before I left, just to test it. The first time I tested, I was only going to do it once, but the first time I tested, I got an invalid because it got to the lab unsealed somehow.
Oh my God.
So I was like, all right, that's good to know. So the next weekend, I booked a test for Friday and another one for Saturday.
Okay.
Just, you know, again, I'm trying to see like how quickly are these results coming back? Like, mm-hmm. and it was like a drive-in one where you do the test yourself.
Yeah.
I will say that I nasally assaulted myself more than any of the nurses did when I was in Tampa. And I appreciate them because they barely rubbed my nose. I'm questioning how valid those tests were, but I'm sure they take it all very seriously. We had a Zoom meeting about 2 weeks before going down with like the NFL's COVID preparedness team. They had like a rigorous team that was there. They were at all the practice telling people to socially distance and all that stuff. And then when I flew in Sunday, I went straight from the airport to the COVID test place to get tested again, because we had to get tested 48 hours before our first practice on Tuesday. And then we got tested every 48 hours. And then Thursday, Friday, we got tested both of those days because just the 48 hours didn't work out. And we had to get 48 before the Super Bowl, of course. But that process was, they made it very convenient. It was right at our check-in spot, right across the street from the stadium. We had an app where we self-report, like, have you felt a fever in the past 20, 48 hours or whatever? Have you been in contact with, you know, like the typical questions they ask you. And then it shows like a little certificate that's like green lit, and then you show it and they do the little assault. And then you're on your way to practice. So yeah, that was kind of the COVID procedure there.
So was it weird kind of, since you've kind of been isolating yourself and this is the only time like you, and all of a sudden you're in a spot with this many people, and of course everyone's wearing masks and it's people that you know, but it's not everyone that you know. Was it a weird vibe for you? Like, was it just
So I'm typically fairly introverted. I don't, which is weird to say for me doing this at the Super Bowl, I typically don't like being around a lot of people. So that aspect was kind of cool. But it was weird seeing people that we go to this winter camp together all the time, every year. You can't give them a hug. You can't give them a handshake. Like, that distance is forced there. I'll be completely honest. It loosened up as the week went along. We're all getting tested together. We're, for the most part, being good, some people. But like every surprisingly, I believe everyone tested negative throughout the whole thing. I don't think we lost anyone. I could be wrong there, but it was weird. And especially seeing like the stagehands that we work with, because a lot of the stagehands was even cut thin. They used a different production company because of the way they were doing the show.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, that's public knowledge. I had to think for a second. So
Yeah.
like the production company that does this, from the people I talk to, are is more like TV production type people. So this that's like the whole stage, the set versus moving massive pieces of equipment onto the stage and connecting it. So you need a different type of crew for that because it's a different world. And that was noticeable. And it was hard to see. I mean, it was encouraging to see the well wishes from those guys on Facebook and whatnot, leading up to the show. Like, guys, break a leg. We're with you. We can't wait to see you in LA. That it was good. It sucked a lot, to be honest. Like, it was rough this year because you look forward to seeing the people more than the show itself, to be completely honest, because like. And we know that those guys and girls have not worked in a year. Like one of our leaders from past years who wasn't on it this year because of the different production company, his last gig was the Super Bowl last year,
Wow.
which is rough, 'cause like me, I've been working all year, probably more so than I have before because it's just been insane. And now I'm doing a second job by doing this, and they haven't worked for an entire year. That's crazy. And some people will be like, well, it's the entertainment industry, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. But it's like we live in a country where a lot of people seem to think that certain jobs are more important than others, which is kind of comical because probably one of the only things that makes our country great or livable is that there are so many different ways people can go and make a difference in their little part of the world, you know? People, that's kind of my whole like not really liking pop culture and really caring about celebrities. It's like they're literally just people doing their job the hopefully the best way they know how, if they weren't like a childhood actor that got thrown upon it and they're, you know, struggling with that aspect. But like for the most part, people are doing whatever their job is, whatever their calling is, sometimes doing what they don't even want to be doing, in hopes to getting to where they want to get go. But everyone's job is important in its own way, like from the janitor to the CEO to the valet to the waiters and waitresses to the pyro guys to, you know, like all these people have important roles to in the grand scheme of things, it makes this country okay. I refuse to say great because that's just
Fair
funny to
enough.
me.
Fair enough. Yep, well, fair
Never
enough.
has it, never has it ever.
I got you. Yep. Yeah. So I appreciate you coming on. It's been an honor, 4 years in the making. you know? And of course, you know, I get you in a year where, you know, shit has really hit the fan.
You did good. 4 years was for a reason.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I did my research. I watched a bunch of the halftime shows. I remember a bunch of them in my head. I refuse to remember the Maroon 5 one.
I haven't seen this one yet.
Listen, I got into an argument last night with somebody.
Really? Because
they said that they couldn't understand what he was saying. And I was like, no one can understand what he's saying. He's Canadian. They're like, what's that supposed to mean? Justin Bieber's Canadian. I'm like, he's a different Canadian.
He's a boy.
Yeah. And also, this one is soul and art. Like,
yeah.
I will say, for me, the production of it, the aspect, the visual of it, for me, fantastic. Everyone's like, it was boring. I'm like, it entertained me for 14 minutes this morning when I was waiting for my system to upgrade. So I don't know what you're talking about. Because it was more entertaining than that dumbass taking his shirt off. I don't know.
You really hate that.
Oh, I hate him so much. I really.
That's great.
Oh. Now, don't get me wrong, because I am a huge fan of, like, just bringing Bruno Mars back every year. Yeah. Bring him back every year. Just,
he is, you know, one of my favorites. Yeah.
Like, have him read the phone book. I don't give a shit. Just have him come back. Like, let's go. I mean, the 2 years that he came back, I was like, you know what? I need to see this man on tour. And I did. I melted my face off with Kira. We got stuck in traffic for like 2.5 hours out of Boston. And it was the best 2 hours of our life. Because we sang songs with people that were stuck in traffic with us. It was amazing.
That's festival life.
I'm telling you, like, it was fantastic. I mean, I think when you can put on a show, like, even last year, I got into a heated, I'm starting to get, like, really mad with people about, this wasn't entertaining, or that was too provocative. Shut up.
I remember that one. Listen. The provocative. I'm like, they're dancing.
Have you not seen the cheerleaders that are, like, technically on the sidelines? Because they've been there since the 80s.
I've been wondering what the point of them is.
Seriously, forever. At this point, their luster for the cheerleaders is no, like, the 90s is over. The cheerleaders, right. I mean, granted, they volunteer, they go to the hospitals, they do great work.
That's their main job.
Right.
I'm convinced that's it. Like, donor events, doing like charity work, which is great. Like, I have no problem with that, but let's call it what it is. Like, it's just PR.
Listen, nonsense. Those millionaires that are sitting on the bench, they honestly aren't caring about you because they're going, no, they're caring about like getting this money, getting the bag, and then going hitting up the local dive bar with the local chicks that they know are going to be discreet at the end of the night.
Yeah. Yep.
So, like, I'm sorry. But, like, this was my argument, was, like, okay, if you look at their cheerleading outfits nowadays when they're not playing here in the winter, compared to what these, you know, women, I was like, what was the difference? Britney Spears wore what she wore with Justin Timberlake and Aerosmith back in the day. What's the difference? Right. I was like, I think...
Like, who cares?
I think it was, like, the cultural thing, which, you know, then that gets me too. And I'm like,
exactly. That's exactly what it was. That's all it was. Cause, like, who cares?
The whole Beyonce thing with the Bruno Mars and they're all wearing black and then there's Coldplay. I'm like, why was Coldplay there? Like, that.
that was the smartest decision Coldplay made by bringing them on with him.
Like,
yeah, like, how'd you get here?
I'm like, who created this? Like, thank God, I don't know what Jay-Z's doing, like, with some of these artists, but I'm like, The Weeknd, huh? He's a very sad boy. I was watching it, and I was like, is Daft Punk really there?
I was so hoping that Daft Punk would show up.
They weren't there? Like, so
maybe did they show them on the screen? Because I couldn't see.
I'm not sure. Because go and watch it, because I'm not sure. So When you watch it, like the whole beginning, I was like mesmerized by this thing. I was like, there are these angels? What are these? And then they look like the Mothman with the glowing red eyes. And I was like, he's got straight up Mothman up in this stadium right now. I'm like, this fool is doing a great job.
And it's been a long con for him too. That whole like story.
Yes. And since everyone's like last been January. So upset. And like, everyone's been like, is he wearing a jock strap? Like they're wearing jock straps on their face. I'm like, do you not understand? Also, he's giving the big middle finger to the Grammys in the like billboards right now. Are you guys not following this? Like he's literally giving a finger to Hollywood. I mean, like you guys are so.
Yeah. And like, and people don't get it unless they've like been following The Weeknd. That's what I kind of like. Once I realized what was going on, I was like, oh, he's been working on this for a year.
He's a smart man. And here's the thing. I don't even like The Weeknd that much.
Right.
But like that song, I Can't Feel My Face. Like I was like, that's a. And then when someone told me what it was actually really about, I was like,
yeah.
I was like, all right.
Look Big at brain that. Energy.
I'm like, all right. And everyone's, you know, I'm like, everyone's singing it. And I was like,
yeah.
You know what this song's about? Okay.
They have no idea.
Watch next
and
year.
And I'm not going to bust their bubble either.
Next year, watch it be like the cast of Hamilton or something like that.
Although, yeah, I'm interested to see what happens next year. In LA? We'll
see. Ooh, in LA. Well, I mean,
They never pick artists from the town, so I always throw that out.
Series? Okay, so I'm mad, still mad, that Pitbull did not come out last year.
One of my good friends would say the same thing.
Lisa, you can't Mr. 305 not come out in 305. Like, what? You got J-Lo Shakira?
He must have done like the pregame or something or a tailgate.
You have did a good show. Missed an opportunity to have Mr. 305 come out in 305. And then in Atlanta, I mean, what? They had what? Ludacris and Big Boy, but they didn't have Andre 3000.
Oh, yeah. Well, Andre 3000 doesn't come out for anything.
But it would have been amazing. Like
you find Andre 3000 randomly on the street playing a flute, but like that's about it.
Just bring him out then. Like T.I., like seriously, you couldn't have had Atlanta's and best what's his performance.
Face? Travis Scott, too. I knew there was another one.
Wasn't that from
two practices?
Travis Scott, yeah, wasn't that at Maroon 5 with the SpongeBob thing? I was so confused. What was that SpongeBob thing? I was so confused by that. I was like, they're like, that was to honor the SpongeBob guy. And I was like,
during practice, I thought that was like, I thought they were hiding something from us. Because sometimes during practice, they won't play the song that they're going to play just to protect things, or they'll stop playing the music in the stadium and just play it in the talent's ear so that no one can pick up on it. So I had never heard that song before. What is it called?
It's something mode.
Sicko mode.
Yeah.
Sicko mode. I had never heard that song before. I'm like, who mixes a song like this? There's like three beats in one song. I'm like, what's going on? And then I heard it like on the radio later on. I'm like, oh, they did that on purpose. Okay. Like now that I know they did it on purpose, I'm like, all right, that's kind of cool.
Wasn't Bruno a surprise on one of the halftime shows?
A surprise?
I thought he was a surprise because I don't remember him being like one of the artists coming up and then all of a sudden he was there and I was like, hold on. I didn't know Bruno was here today. Like, no one told me Bruno was coming today. And I was like, don't get me wrong. Because
he headlined New Jersey with Red Hot Chili Peppers. And then
I think he was a surprise for Beyonce and Coldplay. Because she was out on the field and all of a sudden he just came out of nowhere. And I was like,
oh, they didn't even announce that he was doing that one?
No, that was in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, for the 50th.
Oh. I was so mad at all my friends. All of the hype, like all of the parties that happened that entire week. I was like, the 1 year I am not in San Francisco.
It was
I'm
fun.
Like, Metallica is out there playing right on the, like, right on the bay. I'm like, they got like, they brought Steve Perry back. I'm like, seriously?
Yeah, it was a fun time in the bay.
I love
that was a fun trip. You know, I went up to the Muir Woods and did like a 3 mile hike by accident because I went the wrong way. I just kept going up. I'm like, where am I going? It was beautiful out there.
It's
but
a shame that like Oakland Stadium was just such crap, because you know what? They should have definitely brought Too Short and E-40 out for something.
That'd have been fun.
Would have been fun. Now those two are some humble ass guys. I will say this. Yeah. For like your whole run in with Chris Rock. So I've met both of them. I've actually, so E-40 was one of my clients when I worked at a car wash.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's so funny because I didn't know who he was. And my frat brothers were talking about him making a comeback. And I was like, who is this guy? And they're like, oh, he's a rapper.
Royalty.
I was like, okay. So the next day, this guy comes in and who's the manager today? I said, Mark. And he goes, tell Mark E-40's out here. And I was like, E-40 the rapper? And he goes, what's up? I'm like, oh, I don't know you. My roommates talk about you a lot. And what's your name? I'm like, Bridget. He's like, what's up, baby girl? And he needed to get his cars done because he was a VIP. So like, so every time he'd come in, he'd be like, what's up? And
did you see?
Oh, I saw Versus. Trust me.
How did you know? That was awesome.
Oh, man. I was like, oh, look at him go. And then I used to eat at this barbecue joint in Oakland. And we were in the jazz joint in the back. And people were all like rustling around. And I was with like all my friends. Guys, Too Short just tried to steal our cornbread. I was like, Too Short the rapper? They're like, stop saying that, Bridget.
The like, rapper, like Chance the rapper. So that must be where he got it from, you.
Yeah. And I was just, so every time I was at Everett and Jones, he was always there. And he's like, hey. He's like, how's your food today? And I was like, I'm doing good. It's good. It's good. I was like,
was it his spot?
It was not. No, he didn't own it. He just was always there. The food was just that good. Nice. But it's one of those things where I was just like, everyone's like, you're not freaking out. I'm like, should I be?
Right.
I don't know. It's like, I met half of the Oakland Raiders and I met half of the Golden State Warriors before they were the Golden State Warriors before Steph Curry. And I was like, should I be fazed by these guys? I don't know. Like this big old honking white dude dressed in head to toe Reebok. I'm like, you know, the one, and this is, and everyone's heard the story, so I'm going to probably cut this out because everyone's like, Jesus, Bridget, this is not about you. It's about Lamar. is having Easter Sunday with Rod Stewart. So, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
That's so random.
But I usually am like, well, how are we going to play this, kid? I'm like, do I tell you the Sir Rod Stewart story or that I know E-40? Which one?
Or both, because that shows range.
That is true, but the fact is, here in Massachusetts, not many people know E-40. So
yeah, which is weird because he's been around forever.
Like, is he the one with that T-Pain song? I'm like, no.
Oh, good. No. That's when you stop having a conversation with someone. Yeah. Like, this is going nowhere. I'll see you when I see you. Maybe.
Yeah, right?
If I don't cross the street when I see you.
But I appreciate you taking the time. Again, I know I said it already, but I appreciate you doing this tonight. I know that you're ready for bed. Go to sleep on that drafting table.
No, I've elevated to a Tempur-Pedic mattress now.
Ooh, look at you, fancy sir.
Adulting now. It's the one part of adulting that wasn't a hoax.
Perfect. Yeah, right? Exactly. Well, thank you again. And, you know, maybe we'll catch up with you next year after LA and see what happens, you know, obviously. And we'll go from there.
Sounds right.
All right. Night, night.
Night.